Raidieraksts drošinātājs.
Well, the only thing that I know about you is that you are from Denmark and that you help Ukrainian army. So at the beginning, I wanted to ask you to tell me more about yourself. Who are you and what do you do?
I'm 55 years old, born and grew up in Denmark, got into the military. I've been connected to the military for a while and comes with a Danish military background and a lot of background in logistics. I've done a lot of crazy things in my life, and yeah, now I'm in Ukraine and giving my heart and body and soul to Ukraine. And I'm actually married to a woman. My wife is from Latvia, from Riga.
Oh, and how did you met?
About 20 years ago in Denmark. I more than less fell in love with her, and I actually asked her grandmama for her hand, and she said her grandmama said yes. But the 5th of May, 4 years ago, I married her. And then the corona started when she was on vacation in Latvia. So we more than less, everything a little bit to shit. So she's actually living in Latvia now and have her own problems. Mm-hmm. So I have not seen her very much since the last 3 years, 3.5 years. But yeah, it's crazy. Worst part is I actually care for her very, and her son.
So it's hard to live this way, I guess.
She was actually with me in Ukraine for about 10 days to see what I'm actually doing and all that. She actually liked it, but she also didn't like it because she was a little stressed about, when the air load coming and about the bombs and the shooting and all that shit. She didn't like that so much. Mm. But I had a good time it was very good to spend a little time with her.
At the beginning, you told me that you had some military background as well. For how long did you work for Danish Army?
Back in the 90s, I started in the Danish Army and I was there for about, 11, 12 months. And then I went out and then I went in again and spent some more time there. But my connection to the Danish Army have been since, I think it's 92 and up till today. I still come on the military base for this veterans meet and different kind of galas and all that shit. Because now I got my pension and so, this is the thing. I can't talk so much about the Danish military because when I started in Ukraine, it was not allowed for us to go to Ukraine. Danish system more or less shut me down. And after they started to say that we could go to Ukraine and we were allowed to go to Ukraine and fight for Ukraine and go to Russia if we wanted to go to Russia and fight for that, they still didn't open the door. So I'm still not allowed to speak too much about the Danish army.
But you're not you are connected to the Danish army still somehow, but you're not like soldier or something like that. Yes.
No. I'm not working with the Danish army. I still have friends, old colleagues and all this who is in the Danish military, but I'm not working with the Danish military or the Danish government in any way anymore. I'm only working with the Ukrainian military and people who help me out to do something good for the Ukrainian military or the Ukrainian people.
So did you also fought in Ukraine as like...
I got to Ukraine back in the start of the war and I got signed in the Legion.
The Foreign Legion, yes.
Yeah, the Foreign Legion. At that time, they called it the Foreign Legion of Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, today, they call it the Legion Defense of Ukraine. So in the start, it was the Legion of Ukraine. But yeah, it changed. And I was there for about a couple of weeks. And then because the command in the Legion, everything that went with the Legion in the start was very poor. It was not very good. And it was like, one hand didn't know what the other hand did. It was just, you get on a truck and then you get out to the field and then they say, no, russki soldaty, no tam, давай, go. And then the commanders go away. And I have not been in Ukraine for more than I have been there for under 48 hours, about 48 hours when I was in the front line.
Mm.
And it was like, we were just, how can I say, cannon fodder, We were just there to get killed. It felt like that.
So you didn't have any proper training before that, yes?
No. In the start of the war, there was no military base for training and all that shit. That started up later when they moved from They let him move to this place in Ukraine where they have the center for the Legion, where you get signed in. Because I left the Legion and then I took back to Kiev, and I took from Kiev to Lviv, and then I took to Yarovy. And then I got in. I wanted to go. I changed my mind. I didn't want to leave because I didn't come to Ukraine to just run away. So instead of being angry and get, how can I say, pissed at everything, because I was used to the European or the Danish way the military worked. You know, there was a command structure, there was everything. You know, there was a command structure and there was a support structure. And in the start of the war, there was no command, there was no actually structure. Everybody was running around like a little bit like headless chicken, and everybody wants to go to the front and fight. Mm-hmm. It was crazy.
In which parts of Ukraine did you fought back then?
I've been in the area of around Bucha. And then I made a supply drop and a drive to Mariupol, and was one of the last vehicles getting out of Mariupol before it shut down. We actually got shot at on this trip also.
And what do you remember about that time, about fighting in around Kiev in Mariupol there?
Oh, shit. That was not beautiful. Yeah. Let me tell you that. It was like shit. It was really, really bad. It was crazy. We were a lot of volunteers, soldiers from all over the world. And it was also when I started to get my nickname and all that shit. I started to get my nickname up there. And then when I got back from Kiev and all this, to when I got to the Yavori area around Yavori and the Lviv Oblast, then they changed the rules for the, how old you could be to join the Legion. The same morning, I called the Legion and asked how old you should be, how old you could be to get into the Legion. And they say 55. Okay, then everything was good. And then 30 minutes later, I get to the office, to the cantina, and speak with the commanding officer. And he tells me I'm too old. And then I actually get angry with him. And I said to him, how the fuck, they told me this morning, 30 minutes ago, that it was 55. Yeah, but they just changed it from 55 to 52. No, from 55 to 50. And I was 52 years old. So I got pissed at him, because why the fuck should I waste my time to go there if I couldn't be there? And he said, okay, so how many push-ups can you take? Don't know. I said, maybe 5, maybe 10, maybe 30. But one thing I know, I can take more than you. And then he get angry with me. And then he told me to go away.
So that was the point when you ended this participation in active war, yes?
Yeah. Also, like I said to him, listen, I already been fighting for your country, and now you tell me I cannot be here. What the fuck? In the start, me and him, we didn't like each other, but we actually still very good friends, and we still speak. And he told me to piss off, and I went for this yellow house. I got to the yellow house. There was an American guy who was, had the command of the Yellow House. That was the safe house for the Legion. And then he found out I was from Denmark and all that shit. And he tells me, okay, hey, I need your help. Okay, I said, what do you need me to do? You need me to help run this Yellow House. Okay, so I got second command and got the nickname Major. We had guys coming in from Latvia, from the Czech Republic, and we have people coming all over the world, from Finland, from UK, from Denmark, from Germany, from Poland, Spain, Portugal, everywhere. People were coming. And I was there for about 3 weeks. Then I went to Denmark because my daughter had confirmation. And I was in Denmark for 6 days. And then I got back to Ukraine. And I got back to this cantina and I spoke with my friend Yuri, and I said, oh, is there still a problem with me to get into the Legion? Yeah, but I have a better idea for you, he told me. Okay, and what do you want me to do? I want you to speak with a guy from the military, 24th Brigade, and speak with him. He's the commander of the base. He needs instructors. I said, okay. Yeah, he will be here tomorrow morning. Okay. And then he called me up about 30 minutes later. He said, he'll be here in this afternoon. Can you speak with him? Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I spoke with Alexander. He's also not here anymore. He died last summer. No, he died the late summer 22, actually. That was back in 22. And then spoke with him, and the next morning I went to the Yavori military base, the Polygon, and start training soldiers. Build up a very good training team with people from Estonia, no, not Estonia, from Lithuania and so on, England, US, different places all over the world again.
What did you saw at those weeks, those months? You said that people from all over the world came in, came to Ukraine. What did you notice in speaking with them, seeing how they behave and so on? Why they came to Ukraine? Why it was important for them, and what were their motivations?
Yeah, many of them is many of those guys who was coming in. A lot of them, it's difficult to say how many, you know, but some of them was, you know, this gamer type, you know, they want to be heroes overnight or something like that, who didn't have any military backgrounds and all this, who wanted to fight. We needed to get them because we couldn't work with them. They didn't understand anything about being a soldier. Then we have the professional soldiers, knew the stuff and knew how to be a soldier and follow command, and there was sappers, there was EODs, it was a lot of different people coming in, infantry soldiers and all this. So, but therefore all the soldiers was, they want to do something good. They saw what was wrong in Ukraine, and the Russian was going into Ukraine and trying to take a country that was not theirs, and they wanted to protect that country. And most of them didn't want to do it because they want to be heroes. They wanted to do it because they wanted to make a difference.
What was your motivation? Why did you go to Ukraine?
I went to Ukraine. I was sitting and watching it in TV, in the news and all this, and I couldn't watch anymore, so I packed up my stuff. I had a little bit of military gear, and it could be in a one bag. That was what I had with me. When I went there, I had one normal civilian clothes on and one military bag with military gear, and I went to Ukraine, and I actually didn't care if I have to be a soldier or I have to clean toilets. It didn't matter what I have to do, so long I could make a difference. You know, I just want to help save a country who needs the help. Like I said in an interview with what I always say when I get this question, you know, back in 1940, Denmark got attacked by Germany. And if the world have helped us back in 1940 when the Germans attacked Denmark, maybe the world would be different today. I grew up with grandparents who was from World War II, and parents who grew up the aftermath of World War II. And so I heard a lot of stories about it. And I come from a family who growing up with the military and have been part of the military the whole life. So it was natural for me.
Was it hard to get over the border to get into Ukraine?
Back in 22?
Yeah, when you first went there.
I was actually, I have a very good friend in Poland, and I went to him. Him and his dad picked me up from the airport, and I went, spent the night with them, his family, and we got something to eat and all this. And his dad and my friend, they drove me to the Ukrainian border. So his dad, he started walking around and speaking with people who is where I could get a lift into Ukraine. And there was a woman, she was not used to driving a car with a stick. And she had a car who had to be donated to the Ukrainian military. So she asked me if I could drive a car with stick. And I said, yeah, why not? I can do that. So I got in the car and I drove into Ukraine in a car that went to the military. So it was actually pretty easy for me. Yeah, but since the start of the war, I will say in the start, it was easy to get in and out of Ukraine. It was always a little bit lower to get out if you drive out, but if you walked out, it was not a big problem because you have your luggage and you go through the scanner and everything. So that went pretty fast. But if you drove, that could take 12, 15, 20 hours before you're out of Ukraine. I have never had any big problems driving into Ukraine.
And do you know approximately how many Danes are still fighting on the Ukrainian side or helping actively the military there?
Helping the military, it's under, I think it's about four or five left. It's definitely under 10. We are not very many Danish former soldiers or anything like that in Ukraine anymore. I don't actually know the exact number because I don't think actually nobody knows the actual number. But I know two or three of them who is there right now, maybe four. So what I know 100% sure is that there is me and four other Danish soldiers in Ukraine left.
We know that, well, speaking with the other people from around the world who also fought in Ukraine, this active military help is decreasing. Well, the number of foreign soldiers has decreased since the start of the full-scale invasion. So how do you see why it is that way? Well, we know that, of course, soldiers cannot, fight for unlimited time. Unfortunately, Ukrainians have to do it. Many of them are at the front for 1 year, 2 years, maybe even more. But the foreign soldiers, I guess, they have this opportunity to leave the front line. So maybe that's the reason. How do you see why has this number of foreign soldiers decreased in Ukraine?
It is decreasing. And those who still fight, who have been there for a long time, they definitely fall in love with the country. They love Ukraine as much as I do. Those who comes to Ukraine for foreign soldiers who is coming there now is, like I said, former soldiers, but it's more like, it's not like it was in the start where it was people from all over the world. And the numbers who is coming in is very, very low. But they are still coming. They are still coming, but we need more. We can never get enough foreign soldiers who know what they're doing and know how to fight and help making the Ukrainian soldiers better, the new soldiers who's coming in, and teach them how to be soldiers also and how to fight. It's because when the Legion is not fighting, they're teaching soldiers how to be better, and they're working together to get better self, themselves, work better together in the units and all that. So there's a lot of things going on with those different units.
When you came to Ukraine, what was the attitude of the Ukrainian soldiers towards you when you were there at the beginning? Were they, I don't know, happy, or they? Some of them thought, well, what the hell are the Danish men doing here? And what was the attitude?
No. It's the people I'm working with, many of them I have known for a long, very long time. It sounds crazy because I have only been about close to 3 years in Ukraine, but 3 years in Ukraine, it's a long time. It is a very long time because there's a war going on, and a lot of those people I met in the start are not with us anymore. But, you know, everything goes so fast in Ukraine, and their attitude towards me is like, you know, I mean a lot to a lot of the soldiers. I think, I know. So they're always happy, and believe me, when I'm in together with them in the front line, if I am back from the front line and all this, I never go to bed hungry because they always take care of me. They're always there for me, you know, because I am also there for them. Back in 22 in the polygon when we were training, and the weather was not very good. It was raining a little bit, and we have been working hard for a couple of days with very little sleep and a lot of very hard training. People were tired. I just kept pushing them. They had to dig trenches and so they could be safe if there was coming mortar fire or artillery fire. There was no power left in them. I was walking around them in the rain, and I just remember that one woman from Denmark gave me a red nose like a clown. And I just got the idea, why not make some fun with the guys and, you know, make them smile just a little bit, you know. Put a smile on the face and all the bad things that happening. So I put on this red nose and I was walking around them. And then one soldier saw me and he started laughing. And then another soldier. And before I knew it, there was 120 soldiers start laughing. So it was a little like a trademark. Every time I was finished up the training, or I have to go to the front line, I put on this red nose. And I didn't think it didn't have a bigger meaning, but like I said to them, when they start laughing, they just have to remember when everything is starting to seem so bad, it can't get worse. then just remember there is only one way. It can only get start to get better. But remember the red nose and follow it. And everybody was laughing. And then 6 months later, I got up to an area outside of Bucha, and I run into some of the soldiers I have been working with about 6 months later, earlier. And the first thing they start to say to me, "Hey, Major, Odin, we love you. Where is your red nose? Your red nose." And I said, I told them that I gave my red nose to a child, but next time I will come to them, I'll bring a red nose. And actually, a doctor with this hospital buses from Latvia, he actually got me a new red nose to Ukraine. I just remember that.
Yeah, we have those clown doctors, yeah.
Yeah, no, but he's a doctor and he's working with this hospital buses who's driving from Latvia to Ukraine. And he sent red nose from Latvia to me. When I got up to them next time, I put on my red nose and everybody was start laughing and all this. And they told me that they had been on a very, very bad situation where they were get bombing, artillery and mortar fire. And it went on for a very, very long time. And they were sitting in the basement and out of nowhere, one of the guys started laughing, a little like crazy laughing. And, you know, he was laughing so hard that the tears was going down his cheeks. And everybody thought he was starting to go cuckoo, or go crazy. And he said, no, just remember one thing. Remember Major in the polygon and his red nose. And then everybody who was sitting in that basement started laughing like, you know, crazy. It actually touched me very, very much that they remember the red nose and me. And it actually put a smile on them, their faces, when everything was very, very bad. For me, it meant a lot. It actually touched me very deep that a small thing like this could make a big difference for the guys in the front, you know?
Yeah. Well, it is no secret that Ukraine has problems with manpower resources. What do you think about mobilization? Should it be expanded and so on?
I think the mobilization should be expanded, but I think the Ukrainian guys who is going around in Kiev and in Lviv and in the different cities, you know, and just not doing so much, you know, they either have their work and all this. But I think if they're proud of their country and they want the country to be free, they should join the army and get the education, fight for the country, fight for the freedom. Because if they don't fight for the freedom, they're going to lose everything. And we all know what is going to happen if Russia is going to take Ukraine. It's going to be very bad. And then it's just a question before they're going to open the doors to try to go to Latvia, Estonia, and Lithuania. You know what I mean? There's a reason there's a lot of Danish soldiers in Latvia.
What do you see now in Ukraine when you go there, when you are there? How do you see soldiers now, their motivation, their emotions? We know that there are desertion cases. They are increasing as well. They are, of course, tired. A lot of them fought for many months, more than a year, 2 years. How do you see? What is the situation at the front lines, near the front? What do you see?
What I see is that they have a big motivation, but they are tired. They are burned out. They need more rotations, so they come back and have some time with the family, can relax and all this. But they are, when you have been fighting for so long time, it's also difficult to come back. But, you know, and they're not fighting for the president, they're fighting for the country. You know, they're not fighting for Zelensky. It's not because he's telling them to fight. It's because they're fighting with the heart to fight for the country, those who fight. Motivation is there, but everybody's starting to get tired because they don't get enough time off. In Denmark, if you're gonna get deployed to some war zone, some country where there's a war where you're gonna be there for 3 months, and then you have 3 weeks off, and then you have 3 months more, and then you have to have a certain amount of time before you can go back to the front line. But because there's not enough soldiers in Ukraine, the soldiers there fighting, yeah, like I said, for years, you know. So my very good friend is Svetoslav, my brother. I love him so much. He had been fighting since the start of the war, and he's a major in the front line. And we start working together back in 22, where he was a captain with 24 Brigade. And then I think it was start of this year. Yeah, I think it was the start of this year where he went for 33 Brigade, when he got moved over to 33 Brigade. So, but I'm still working with him. I'm still going to the 33 Brigade, being with them down there. I still have contacts in the 24 Brigade where I go and say hi to them. Yeah, I'm working with some guys in the 31 Brigade, Edelweiss unit. Very, very close friends. Also, because I'm the only Danish guy who is educated as a military drone pilot in Ukraine.
So you, of course, you are worried about those friends that you have at the front line.
Yeah. Believe me, I'm worried every day. And when I'm riding with them and, you know, we are sending voice messages to each other and all this, I, you know, when I don't hear from them for a couple of days or for a week, or even my friend and my brother Svetoslav, it's so difficult. He broke his telephone, so I didn't hear from him for over 1 month. So it was like really, really bad, you know. I don't like that situation.
Yeah, because you never know if you can't reach someone, you don't know it. If he's hurt or dead or just everything's fine, but he cannot talk with you.
Yeah, because, when I'm together with Svetoslav, it's down with the Kurokovo, down in the area close to Marinka and all this. It's a very bad area right now. And I know he's a commanding soldier. He's the major down there, but he's one of those guys who's going out into the front. He's not just sitting in the office and telling what to do, you know. This is also why his soldiers love to work with him, and because he's showing the way, you know. Even I got a message from him one day, you know. I have just been together with him, and 2 days later, I can't get hold of him. And then 1.5 days later, he wrote to me and said, hey, sorry, I didn't answer you, but I got wounded. And then he sent me pictures where they're standing with a magnet and pulling bullets out of his body, you know. And it's a crazy thing, you know. He got wounded. He got what he said, what was it, 3 or 4 bullets who went through him. And he was 6 weeks off. Then he was back in the front line. And he just got shot a couple of times. You know? This is how it is, you know. We are doing what we can to save Ukraine and save the countries around them, you know. If it's the same thing happened to Latvia, I'll go to Latvia, you know. It's not because I don't like the Russians, but, you know, I have a tattoo on my leg that says, a soldier doesn't fight because he hates the people in front of him, or the enemy in front of him. He fights because he loves what he left behind. You cannot fight with hate, because then you're not thinking clearly.
I wanted to speak also about, of course, the help that you deliver to Ukraine. Are you bringing it from Denmark, and how do you get those things, and what are those things that you bring to Ukraine?
I have been bringing a doctor's clinic to Ukraine. I got donated from Denmark. I have been bringing field rations from my friends who have connection to the Danish military, and I have been bringing military gear, military uniforms, food for the civilians. Yeah, after I got wounded, I was staying in the hotel. I started to make a Pizza Wednesday and for the children in this hotel who was refugees from the front line. So every Wednesday I got out and bought pizza for them, and I got donations in from people around me. And I knew with the, you know, painting books and puzzles and a lot of different things to help out the children. So it's, what can I say, everything I get in.
So you are delivering it to exact persons, exact brigades, and like directly to the people, yeah?
Yeah. Everything that comes to me, people don't have a special wish for where it has to go. I look at what it is, and then I speak with the different units where it most needed. Like camouflage nets, like, you know, different things, you know, body armor, plates, uniforms, you know, sleeping bags. Also, if they wear their, well, if I get donation of drones in, you know, what unit do need it the most right now? Who doesn't have so many drones? So I get it to those units. And, you know, at one time I had a lot of units I was working with, and there was actually too many. And that was the, this, when you start to work with too many units, everything goes, it can run away from you. So I decided that I will cut down on the units. So right now I have three units, three brigades I'm working with. But if I get something in they don't need, then I speak with other units and deliver to them also.
What do you see? What do the Ukrainians need most right now? Is it something connected also with winter and cold weather? I guess it's...
Yeah, what they need right now is for cold weather, you know, like cold weather fighting. Also, they need stuff for drones. They need 3D printers. They need filament. They need a lot of stuff because when they are out there, they're also 3D printing stuff for the drones, for the FPV drones, for the recon drones, for the drop drones, you know, it's for the night flyers. So they, you know, it's like I just got a donation for 52 kilograms of filament from the UK. I got two vehicles from Denmark, and I'm also looking for a new vehicle because I want to have a bigger vehicle so I don't have to drive in a small vehicle where I actually can put a lot of stuff in, but there's not enough space. I have a Suzuki Alto. I don't know if you know what kind of car that is, but it's a very little car. So I'm for myself, and for me to do a better job, I'm also looking for a vehicle like that. But I'm actually looking for a specific car, like a Citroën Cactus from 2015, 2016. A diesel, because it's very cheap on Danish plates, and it drives very far on the liter. It's put up to 32.3 kilometers per liter, and it costs 160 kroners. That's about, 23 euros every 6 months in road taxes in Denmark. So it's actually a very cheap car to have and drive. Even the Suzuki Alto, when it's a small car and all this, that's actually more expensive than this Citroën Cactus. And the Citroën Cactus is actually more than less as big as a Touareg inside. There's a lot of space for very little money. What can I say? I'm working many different angles, and if I get donations in, everything I get in, it goes directly to help out the soldiers in the front line and to make a big difference.
We spoke about that soldiers are, of course, tired at the front lines. And we see that people are tired in the Western countries as well. So the donations are also decreasing, at least in Latvia. We have to remind people to help Ukraine. Yeah. What can you say about Danish people, donations in your country, and how much help do you get from Danish people, maybe?
It's also very difficult to get money in and get donations in, you know, get anything going. But, yeah, those who still help. I have been working with the Defense Ukraine Denmark. It's a big organization. They actually got me a donation for 2,200 complete military uniforms. So yeah, I got military gear for over 2,000 soldiers. So that made a big difference also.
Do you hear that in your country as well? There are these talks about how everyone's tired of this war, and how do you see how Danish society now reacts to what is happening in Ukraine?
Yeah. I think it's more or less the same way in Denmark as it is in Latvia. You know, people are starting to get tired of listening to the war and all the bad things that are going on. But it's not the best way I can say it is that because we are doing something like this, getting on the radio, getting in the news and getting in the newspapers, you know, all those things. Because we are doing this is because we don't want people to forget what actually is going on, you know. Mm. Because it is so easy to say, oh, yeah, they're fighting in Ukraine. Oh, but it's not my country. I don't care, you know. We don't care anymore. It's not our problem. It is so easy. And I know that Latvia is partially put up in two parts, like, you know, the Latvian-orientated people and the Russian-orientated people, you know. For your country, it's very difficult because you also have a little bit of fight inside of your country about should we not help. Oh, yeah, yeah, I want to go to Russia and fight for Russia, and I want to go to Latvia and to Ukraine and fight for Ukraine. Mm. This is, I know that as well, because I have my wife's family, her brother-in-law is very much orientated on Russia, but he's still proud of the difference I do. Like we say in Ukraine, another clusterfuck, you know, it's the same in Denmark, you know, people don't care anymore. People don't think that it's so important anymore, the Kremlin.
What can you say about how much your country, well, government, country has helped Ukraine? We know that, of course, there are a lot of critics towards West, you know, about the military or financial help. What can you say about your country? Can you say that Denmark has helped enough to Ukraine? Or what should be done more?
I don't know if I can say they help enough, because when is enough, you know? Hmm. There's enough is never enough so long there's a war going on, so long there's a possibility to help, because we need to make a difference. And Denmark is actually one of the countries who have given the most to Ukraine.
Yeah, but do you see that Denmark also is serious enough about its own defense? Do you see that Danish people are thinking more about how to protect themselves and in case of something happens?
Yeah, they have said this in Denmark, like in the Danish. They told us in Denmark that we should at least have food for 3 days in every household, minimum 3 days. And it should be so we should also have, so if the electricity goes out, we should could work for 3 days without electricity. So they actually put that out in the news. Mm-hmm. So yeah, as a many people in Denmark don't think it's going to hit Denmark. Mm-hmm. Denmark is not such a big deal. It's more worse for Latvia, because you are neighbors to Russia. Mm-hmm. And also Putin says he wants Latvia, he wants Estonia, he wants Lithuania back, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know that.
Yeah,
he has been saying that since the start of the war, that he wants the old Soviet Union back. He wants control of his own country, because the history of Russia is, everything has belonged to Russia. But, yeah, this is also why we have, I think it's about 1,500 Danish soldiers in Latvia right now.
Okay, well, I have, I guess, the last question. From time to time we ask it to our guests. What would you wish to yourself in the coming, I don't know, weeks, months, or years? I guess you wish for Ukraine victory, strength, and so on. But what would you wish to yourself? I don't know, maybe more strength to help Ukraine, or how do you see it?
Yeah, what my wish is for myself is to get a new car and more money, so I can help more and make a difference. And, you know, because for me, 100 kroners is 5 lives, you know, 100 Danish kroners, that will say what, 12, 13 euros, you can save 5 lives. So for me, to get money to a bigger difference, to help save more people's life and help more people in Ukraine, it's what I wish for myself, that I don't have to have that stress feeling that I don't do enough because I don't have any more money. I used all the money I put aside for, you know, to go on vacation and make my life good. I used it on Ukraine. It's about 50,000 euros I used to help Ukraine of my own money. So yeah, it would be nice to have money so I don't have to think about every coin, like every cent, how to use it. You know, I don't use money on myself. I use money to help other people all the time. So that's why my biggest wish to get this Citroën Cactus 1.5 from 2015-16, so I can, make a bigger difference. And actually, the other day I was looking at one of those cars, and he would give me money for my car, and in exchange with my car, I have to pay 24,500 Danish kroners. It was actually a good deal, but I don't have the money. So it's about 3,300 euros. You know, that would be my dream, to have the possibility to help and still make a difference.
Well, I hope your wish will come true.
I hope so too.
Well, maybe someone in Latvia who hears your story will motivate him, and he will help as well, because our goal, of course, also is to motivate people to help Ukraine.
Thank you for listening to my story and speaking a little bit with me.
Raidieraksts drošinātājs. Paldies manam bijušajam skolas biedram Rihardam Plūmem un Dānim Majoram Odinam par šo sarunu. Ja jums tā šķiet interesanti, padalieties ar saviem radiem draugiem paziņām, nosūtot saiti uz šo mūsu sarunu. Tāpat arī mēs, protams, priecāsimies, ja atstāsiet komentāru vai atsūtīsiet mums e-pastu uz adresi drošinātājs@latvijasradio.lv. Vienmēr gribam dzirdēt jūsu viedokli, kā dzirdējāt arī, kā Rihards teica pirms šīs sarunas. Ideja par to, ka vajadzētu nointervēt tieši majoru Odinu, nāca no viena no klausītājiem. Tā kā mēs jūs dzirdam, mēs mēģinam realizēt jūsu idejas un kopā veidot svarīgu saturu visiem mums un jums. Vēl tik pirms mēs atvadāmies, viena laba ziņa kultūras frontē, kā mēs esam runājuši arī ar citiem mūsu raidieraksta viesiem, kultūra ir viena no svarīgām šīs te cīņas sastāvdaļām. Tad lūk, UNESCO nemateriālās kultūras mantojuma sarakstā nu pat šajā nedēļā ir iekļauta ukraiņu tradicionālā olu krāsošanas māksla. Tas ir pisankas. Pisanka tā sauc šo tradicionālās mākslas formu, un patiesībā par to man arī ir savs stāsts, kad pirms 5 gadiem bija Ļvivā, devos arī uz Ļvivas Brīvdabas muzeju pastaigāties. Tā bija laikam darba diena, un cilvēku bija ļoti maz tur uz vietas. Ja būsiet Ļvivā, noteikti iesāk tur aizbraukt, ļoti mierpilna un interesanta un izzinoša vieta, bet tobrīd laikam brīvdienās tur notika arī dažādas meistarklases, un cilvēki varēja izmēģināt arodas līdzīgi kā pie mums Brīvdabas muzejā Rīgā kaut kādu svētku laikā. Un principā vienīgais no meistariem, ko es tur satiku, bija kāda dāma gados, kura sēdot vienā no šīm senatnīgajām mājām pie loga, kaut ko tur darbojās, es gāju garām, apsveicinājos, un šī man aicināja iekšā, un es skatos, viņi krāso olu čaumalas. Nu, proti, principā nevis olu čaumalas, bet olu, kurai bija tukšs vidus, bija izsūkta, šķidrums izsūkts visārā, ar rokām un ar pincetīti rokās krāsoja un rādīja, kā tas izskatās pat tiešām. Ja jums nav nojausma, kā tas izskatās, tas noteikti ir pavisam citādāk, nekā mēs esam pieraduši krāsot olas, piemēram, uz lieldienām mājās, kad mēs iemetam katlā pārsvarā, un tad kaut ko redzam, kāds tur beigās būs sanāts rezultāts. Tad šeit tiešām ir tāda gleznošana uz olu čaumalām, ļoti smalks, ļoti skrupulos darbs, bet šī sieviete bija laimīga to darot un ļoti lepna par šo kultūras mantojumu, kas ir saglabājies līdz mūsdienām, un prieks tiešām, ka to atzīst no arī starptautiskā mērogā, iekļaujot UNESCO nemateriālās kultūras mantojuma sarakstā. Tā kā apsveicam Ukrainas kultūru ar šo, un man savukārt tas arī būtu viss šajā nedēļā, kā vienmēr tiksimies jau pēc nedēļas, ja mūs klausās cilvēki, kuru radinieki labprāt dzirdētu mūsu saturu, bet viņiem jēdziens podcasts vai raidieraksts platformas vai Latvijas radio mobilā lietot nešķiet kaut kas svešs vai nepaceļams, tad pasakiet viņiem, ka piekdien vakaros 6:15 Latvijas radio pirmajā kanālā tiek arī translēts drošinātājs, bet tādā kompaktākā formātā mums jāiekļaujās 43,5 minūtēs, tad to mēs arī daram. bet vispilnīgākais ieraksts vienmēr šeit, raidieraksts platformās un Latvijas radio mobilajā lietotnē.
Jā, nu gal galā varat jau arī portālā lsm.lv, sabiedrisko mediju portālā arī pēc tam ielūkoties, tur gan noklausīties, gan izlasīt
Pareiz.
Lielo interviju katru nedēļu brīvdienās, tas tur ir iespējams, tā kā arī šāda versija pastāv. Vēl pieminot par dīva kultūras izpausmēm, es domāju, nu, lieldienas vēl tāpat tālāk varbūt, bet Ziemassvētki tuvojas, varam paņemt pa kādam čiekuriņam varbūt, mākslinieciski izkrāsot, apzīmēt, varam kaut ko tādu mājās padarīt kopā ar ģimeni, un tad arī būs krāsaināki Ziemassvētki noteikti.
Tieši tā.
Bet visam pa vidu atceramies sekot Ukrainai, un atceramies noteikti arī, es piebildīšu sekot tam, kas notiek Gruzijā.
Jā, Gruzija, no Gruzijas mēs nenovēršam skatu, turam īkšķis un cerams, ka gruzīniem ielās izdosies tas, kas neizdevās Baltkrieviem ielās pirms dažiem gadiem, un savukārt, domājot par Ziemassvētku dāvanām, atceramies, ka ļoti daudzi darbīgi un aizrautīgi cilvēki un palīdzēt griboši cilvēki Ukrainai ir tepat arī Latvijā sastopami. Jūs noteikti zināt šos fondus, tagad vienkārši atgādinu par tiem, kuri arī gatavo dāvanas Ziemassvētkos Ukrainai, kas tiks vesti uz Ukrainu. Un, starp citu, ar vienu no šādiem aktīvistiem es sarunāšos nākamajā nedēļā, kad... Jā, būs cilvēks, kura vārdu noteikti zinās daudzi sieviešu žurnālu lasītāji un lasītājas, un Ukrainas cīņa par neatkarību šo būtni fantastisko ir vienkārši parādījusi jaunā gaismā, atvērus kaut kādas jaunas čakras, un nu, viņa ir nenogurdināma Ukrainas atbalstītāja. Bet par to pēc nedēļas, jā, gādājam dāvanas saviem mīļajiem, gādājam dāvanas Ukrainai un Ukraiņiem, un tiekamies pēc nedēļas, kad drošinātājs būs klāt jau ar 94. epizodu. Paldies tev, Richard, par šo stundiņu kopā, paldies arī klausītājiem, visu labu un atcerieties! Drošinātājs, tas ir skaidri un personīgi par karu Ukrainā. Raidieraksts Drošinātājs.